Welcome to the Literary Escape Podcast, the only podcast that serves both readers and authors of historical Christian romance. We read, discuss, review, and rate books in this unique romance subgenre, and sprinkle in a few contemporary Christian suspense books. Authors, we bring you inside tips and tricks from those who have gone before you. Then we bring both readers and authors together for fun-filled live Q&As. Literary Escape is the one-stop shop for both readers and authors to connect, learn, and grow together. Let's dive into this adventurous episode. Welcome back, everyone, to another Friday book discussion. I have just a few announcements before we dive into this week's novel. First of all, Unwavering Faith is now available, and many readers have already finished the book and have shared how much they enjoyed it. So thank you all for your compliments and encouragement. Many have also encouraged me to enter Unwavering Faith into some different writing contests. And I especially want to try one in particular, but that entry requires $2,000 in sales before I can enter my manuscript. So this is equivalent to 134 paperbacks or audiobooks or 286 ebooks or any combination of these that are going to get me to that $2,000 mark needed to enter the contest. So I'm asking if you can help me reach this goal. If you have not already purchased your copy, head on over to literaryescape.com/shop to get yours today. And if you have already purchased your copy, then please share the link to purchase with your friends. And let's see if we can meet this goal by March 15th, as entries for the contest are due by March 31st. And with your help, we can make this happen, and I would be forever grateful. We also have two free book club extravaganza events coming up for you as we celebrate the release of Unwavering Faith. The first event will take place next Saturday on February 15th at the Branch Coffee Shop in Fairmount, Indiana at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Author Abby Downey will join me along with our talented cover designer Nikki. This is an incredible opportunity to meet the authors, enjoy a cup of coffee, chat about books, and play bingo. We hope to see you there. For those of you who do not live close, I will be hosting the online book club extravaganza on February 22nd from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to chat and play bingo, and you can learn more about these events at literaryescape.com/events. If you plan to attend the online event, please complete the RSVP form so that I can send you the link to join. And finally, when you visit literaryescape.com/events, you will find all our coffee and books events for 2025. We have some incredible authors coming to chat with you this year, and these are free. Just RSVP to get the link to join each chat. That's it for announcements. In today's episode, we discuss The Creole Princess by Beth White. This is the second book in her Gulf Coast Chronicles series. So now let's dive into this exciting book discussion. All right, guys, welcome back to another book club discussion. We are going to be kicking off with The Creole Princess, which is the second book in the Gulf Coast Chronicles series. But I also just wanted to preface this with, we are once again recording with three of us in person and Jamie joining us online. So if there's a little bit of a lag or time in between while we're talking, just please excuse that as we kind of work with technology today. But Jamie, go ahead and take it away and introduce our book.
Torn between loyalties to family and flag, one young woman is about to discover that her most important allegiance is to her heart. It is 1776, and all along the eastern seaboard, the American struggle for the independence rages. But in the British-held southern part of Mobile, Alabama, the conflict brewing is much quieter, though no less deadly. Lief Lanier may be largely French in period, but she spends most of her time in the company of the ebullient daughter of the British commander of Mobile. When a charming young Spanish merchant docks in town, Lief is immediately struck by his easy wit and flair for the dramatic. But is he truly who he makes himself out to be? Spies abound, and Spain has yet to choose a side in the American conflict. Is Lief simply an easy mark for Rafael Gonzalez to exploit? or are his overtures of love as genuine as Spanish gold? With spectacular detail that brings the cultural gumbo of the colonial Gulf Coast alive, Beth White invites you to step into a world of intrigue and espionage for a little-known slice of the American Revolutionary War.
Wonderful. I actually enjoyed this book more than the first book, but I think it's just the time period. But Mom, what were your thoughts? Which one did you enjoy more, book one or book two?
I enjoyed book one more. It wasn't that I didn't enjoy book two, but it was so confusing to me because of the time difference between mm-hmm. book one and book two. Yeah. And I had to look at the family tree to figure out who in the world was who.
So who wants to explain the family tree? Anybody?
Okay, I can try. Okay, Melissa. So what we have is... okay, so we have Tristan and Genevieve got married, and then they adopted a daughter. So then you're going to hear about Antone in this book, and their uncle, how do you say his name?
Guami.
Something,
yeah.
And then, but really what is Antone and who he married, Justine, and their six kids. This is where they'll have Lise.
Okay, but let's just put it back together. Antoine is Marc Antoine's son, one of the twins.
No. Yeah, Chaz's son.
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry, I missed the spot there.
Yeah, I was just saying. I feel
Madeline
like
Madeline married one of the twin boys.
Mm-hmm. From one of Marc Antoine's. Yep.
Chaz. And then they had Antone and I don't know how to say that the other guy's name.
Mm-hmm.
And then Antone got married to Justine. And they had their six kids all together.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where they have Lise and Simon, Remy, Denise, Genevieve, and Luke Antone.
Okay. Antoine. So I'm going to see if you tell me if I got this right. I think I'm going to try to like narrow it down to who we're talking about.
Okay.
So in book one, we had Tristan and Genevieve, yes. And they adopted a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then we also had Marc Antoine and mm-hmm. Nika, and they had the twin boys.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. One of the twin boys married the daughter that Tristan and Genevieve adopted.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And they had those two that got married, the twin and the adopted daughter.
Mm-hmm.
They had Antoine and Guami. I'm not sure I'm saying that
yeah,
right.
It's he's not really a main character in the book.
Yeah,
it's
you just only hear yeah. like a snippet because yeah. he's already dead
yeah,
by the time dead. This is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Antoine has six kids.
Oh, you know what? We need to wait. Let's back this up again. Antoine got married two different times.
Right.
So in there, there's yeah. Therese or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then she dies, and then he gets married again.
Right.
So
he has two with his first wife and four kids with his second
yes.
wife.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really featuring them. It's featuring him
mm-hmm.
and his two oldest with his first wife.
Yes.
And you do see the four with the second wife, but just not as prevalent.
Yes. Yes.
So hopefully that kind of sure. helps you follow which line of the Lanniers mm-hmm. we went down here. Okay. Or you're thoroughly confused. I don't know.
It really helps to go to her website and print it, because then when you see it, it kind of really helps mm-hmm. to.
I could keep it straight when I was reading the story, but then when you've been away from the story for a little while, you have mm-hmm. to stop and think about who belongs to who and, mm-hmm. you know, all that good stuff. So.
Both all right. And then the different viewpoints throughout the story, like the different characters, you almost have to stop, like, okay, wait a minute, who is that again? So.
Yep.
Yep. Like a side character start too.
Mm-hmm. And so now that we've got the family tree down, ladies, what are your thoughts on Lise, who is our heroine mm-hmm. of the story, and her family members? Because there's kind of like a lot of drama, a lot mm-hmm. of crazy in parts of it. So any family members who stuck out or any thoughts of that family in general overall?
I was really disappointed with her dad. Antoine.
Yeah.
I was really disappointed in his behavior and stuff and not being a good provider, a good family man.
I know, knowing that he came from the Lanniers.
Yes. I expected more from him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything? Any thoughts you have, Mom? On
the same. I was disappointed. Yeah.
Yeah. Jamie.
I really liked Lise. I think she was her and Rafa, Madame Galvez, were probably my favorite characters throughout this series. At least from, I didn't get to finish book three.
That's okay.
But one person that kind of surprised me was Simon, because at first he comes off as very stringent, maybe, or just very older brotherish, and then you find out all these other things, and some of the truer character comes out, and it was just an interesting twist for him and his character. So he surprised me. I was also disappointed in the dad.
Yes, and I think that's why Simon's the way he is, because he had to basically take over dad role because dad's always drunk and passed out or
in embarrassing the family. Like the whole town's like, well, he's the drunk.
I do like his character arc. I do like how he gets himself pulled up out of that eventually. And I felt bad for his second wife, too.
Yes.
Because he keeps getting her pregnant, but then keeps going and getting drunk. You know, it's just like.
All right.
But she really loved him.
Loved him. I was hoping to say that was the hard part.
Yeah.
It didn't really matter what he did. She was still right there.
Yeah. So our main romance couple is Lise, and I'm going to try to say Dawn's name completely, and you guys are going to get a real kick out of this, because I really want to know what your first impression was of Don Rafael Maria Gonzalez de Riprado. Riprado? I hope I said that. Riprada. Riprada. And I don't roll my R's real well. You know what? I should have had my brother-in-law Zeke come over here and say that name.
Oh, yeah, you should have.
He could have like, blah, 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 right there. Had it out. We love you, Zeke. What are your first impressions of Don? Rafael. I think she calls him Rafa most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a charmer. You instantly were like, oh, he's very witty. And I think you immediately knew there was going to be more to his character than what he was putting out there.
Yes, I agree.
When he first introduced and what he was coming over to do, I didn't trust him. I didn't, because I thought, oh my gosh, is he a bad character? Like, is he going to use Lise just to get what he wanted? You know, because of that, and then just kind of break her heart and leave. But then as the story went on, I really enjoyed him. But when he first came in, I was just kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought he was funny. He was always funny and a charmer. But I was kind of like Jessica, too. You know, what are you really after here?
But you really fall in love with him.
Yes. Yes, you do.
You can't help but fall in love with him. And the way he helps Simon. Well, he really helps Simon and his love interest and Lise and her family as well. So. Yeah.
I kept trying to picture what his clothes looked like that he wore. Just the way, you know, I'm like,
Yeah. He was a very interesting character. Mm-hmm. I did enjoy him in his antics, I'll tell you. Yes. So he does some pretty, like, you're like, what are you thinking, son? Like,
The scene with Scarlett when he rescues her, and that was awesome. Yeah. It was just, he just went with it, and
he was quick on his feet. Wrote him to be quick on his feet, and he had to be in that situation in order to rescue her from the slave auction.
And you know, that's one thing that threw me in the book was the slave auction. I guess I was not thinking of the slaves back so far back in like the 1700s. You know, you think of it a little later, so that was a little
Well, this is 1812 ish.
No, that's the third book, isn't it?
No. This is
You're right. I'm sorry. I did jump to the third book. You're right. This is the 1770s. Yeah.
So I think of it more around the Civil War time and not thinking back at it at this time. So that was a surprising little how bad it was. Like just the description of it. And
I can't stand that stuff, just so you know. I cringe. I knew it was coming up. I knew they were going to the auction block. And just the description of the, what was that lady's name that ran? She owned Scarlet, and she owned Scarlet's. They called her Harpy, but because they didn't like her.
Madame Du Soy?
Yes, yeah. Madame Du Soy.
Oh, she's mean.
Yes, the way she treated. I said, I don't know how you can look at another human being and be so cruel.
Mm-hmm.
And so when those descriptions came up, I have a hard time reading them because I just can't imagine ever being cruel to anyone like that.
Mm-hmm.
Even my worst enemy.
Yeah.
You have to remember, though, back then, they didn't consider the African American, they didn't consider them people.
They were property.
And they looked at them like they were animals, just to be worked.
I know, because, okay, so Scarlett, she had her husband there, right? Mm-hmm. And someone made the comment, I can't remember who it was, when she sold Scarlett off to be mean, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
To separate the two, someone made a comment about Scarlett's husband. Oh, it's okay. He'll be fine. He'll mate with somebody else. Like they were animals.
Yeah.
And it made me so mad. I'm like, no.
I can't remember. Yeah. He was in the military. He was like the one that had the crush on Lise forever.
Yes.
And I can't think of his name. And it was just like, well, whatever.
You know? Oh, of course. And then she was livid about that.
And then they said, well, what? They weren't like legally married. They couldn't legally marry. They just...
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so...
And she was like, they are married in the eyes of God, and they love each other. So, but I like how their story ends out, too. Unfortunately, it didn't happen for a lot of people, but... Oh, I do have that Harpy's name in here.
Yes,
I do have it on my notes.
Yes.
We'll get to Harpy in a minute. We have lots of thoughts on her, but I digress. So we were talking about Don Raphael. What did you think of his family?
I loved his sister.
Yeah.
He was a great big brother to her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I would agree. I was a little, they disappointed me at one point.
Yes, they did.
Yes. Very much so.
Yes. Yes, they did. I know what you're talking about, and they did. But they were really good to Scarlett.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Because okay, so when Madame Du Soy, whatever her name is, when she sold her off, she was already pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And she sold her off to be spiteful about, to split the couple up and then knowing that she was pregnant. So then Don Raphael.
Did she know that she was pregnant, though?
I thought she knew she was pregnant.
I don't
Maybe
know
not.
If she knew because
I don't think she knew because I don't think, I mean, think about that would have been property too to her. Like, I don't think she would have. She probably would have waited until she had the kid and then sent her away.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe.
She was that evil.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like, when he basically gets her out of line so she can't be sold, then he takes her to the governor's house, who then basically says, for now, until we can get freedom papers, you'll be considered, you know, ours. But they let her stay with Don's family and his mom and sister were just absolute saints. Like, they treated her like a member of the family and helped her through the pregnancy and helped her with the baby.
Like, the governor, they're like, take a bath, take a couple days of rest. And then, like, when the governor went, his wife wanted to talk to her, she's like, please sit. And Scarlett didn't want to sit. She's like, do I have to? And she's like, yes, please. I don't want to strain my neck. She didn't treat her as a slave.
Yeah.
She was like, no, please sit, you know. And that was really hard for Scarlett because, you know, they're not used to being treated as included in that group. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As an equal.
As an equal. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you have
Madame Gilva was the best. I was trying to find the page number, but the one part in the book where she gets Martine, the cook.
Oh,
when
yes.
Madame Gilva says, oh, well, is this sufficient? Like, I love her. She's like written in for my top three supporting characters.
The governor's wife.
The first issue. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when she gets done and Martine's crying and she's like, I didn't know I was worth was it, like 600, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the way she just turns around and looks at her, she's like, oh, honey, you're worth way more than that.
Yeah.
Or so much more than that. It was just like, oh, my heart. I was just like, ah, internally sobbing.
Yeah. I think sometimes when we look back at that period, we can see all the negative and all the horrible and cruel things. And we forget that there were so many other people that were kind and gracious and fighting for these people quietly for long stretches of time. It had to be done quietly, but they did have people on their side. It was just it was a big monster to slay. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that Beth handles it elegantly in her books.
Yes.
So, yeah. So that moves into, we talked about Madame Doucet, or they all call her Harpy because they don't like her. What are your thoughts on her? And just for anyone who's read the book and forgotten, or maybe you haven't gotten to the book yet. So Madame Doucet, or I think that's how you say her name. She was initially engaged to Antoine, which is Lisa's dad.
Mm-hmm.
But then he had been given money by his dad. One of the twins is his dad, and he had been given money to go up to, I believe, to New Orleans mm-hmm. to buy a ship because they're into the shipping mm-hmm. business. And instead of buying a ship, he saw Lisa's mom on the auction block and bought her and then married her to give her freedom because they said that's the only way she can be free is mm-hmm. if you marry her. But he saw her and basically fell in love at first sight. Bought her, married her, got her freedom papers. And so then when he came back with a wife, so then this Madame Doucet is completely embarrassed by that whole scandal. Mm-hmm. And because everyone knew they were supposed to get married, but he went and married someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts on her?
I ain't like her. I mean, I guess in a way, if you look back far enough, you kind of feel bad for her because she got duped. You know,
it was embarrassing.
It was embarrassing, but she held the grudge forever and treated like them all bad because Lisa and Scarlett and them were cousins, remember?
Yes,
because their moms were twins.
Yeah.
And so like it was really hard for Lisa because she's like, I'm free, I look like Scarlett, but I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And but then she just treated Lisa and all of them just bad.
Yeah.
And I think she got married.
She did.
Yeah. I think she could have let that go and not hung on to that grudge for so long.
But I would agree.
I mean, I do get why she was upset. That was embarrassing.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's just a very mean, vindictive person.
Love not letting bitterness take root.
Yes. Because who does it hurt more? Not the person you're bitter with, but you.
No. Like she, yeah, it turned her so bitter that she was just evil to everyone.
Yeah.
And I think when you read the book, she pays for that later on in the book.
Yes.
She
does.
Pays for what she did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
everyone gets their comeuppance. I always steal that line from The Mummy, which is my all time favorite movie ever. The one in the 90s, okay? The one that came out in the 90s, you remember that movie?
Yeah. With Brendan Fraser?
Yes. It's the best.
One of our favorites.
I love it. But I love, and you remember in there when he was like being mean and she's like, get off, you know, get off me. And she goes, all bad boys get their comeuppance. And he's like, all? Like, oh, crap, I'm in trouble. Anyways, okay, back to off of The Mummy and back to the Creole Princess. So, what were your thoughts on Simon and Daisy's love story? So Simon is Lisa's older brother, and then Daisy is Lisa's best friend, and she's the daughter of a British general that's running the fort there. And just tell me your thoughts on those two.
I think that Simon is a bit dramatic. Sometimes for being so calm and steady, it's just like, are you serious, dude? Like, all we had to do was talk to her again. It drives me nuts when people don't talk. But no.
He just said,
a cute love story.
Wait for me. That was it.
He just said, wait for me. Yeah. I mean, she could have been a bigger part of the story, a bigger part of his life, but he didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. But it was cute that, you know, what he was doing it for, trying to get to a place where he could take care of her. It was honorable. And I like how he finally does come in and save the day. Mm-hmm. But yeah, kind of wanted to shake him, like, quit being so dramatic. You can talk to her. You don't have to run away.
Yeah. No, I understand. What do you guys think about their love story?
I think if I was Daisy, I don't know if I would have waited. Kept waiting. I mean, she's had a crush on him forever, and you know Simon knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, in and out. And he doesn't really say anything, you know, like, he's there, and then he goes off on a trip. He's there, and he goes off on a trip, yeah. And, yeah.
What do you think?
Well, and her dad didn't approve of him.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he was gone more than he was around, and so it's like, how long do you expect me to wait?
Yeah, it was well over a year. He said, wait a year for me. And I think it was over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd been waiting for a long time already.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would have had a hard time moving on, though. I don't know. It was good. I loved the rescue in the end. Basically, mm-hmm. You got the damsel in distress story, which I love. So yeah. I did enjoy that part. But then for Daisy, this next question kind of ties into her a little bit, because she's really caught between a rock and a hard spot, because her dad's a British general, mm-hmm. but she's all about the being a rebel. She's all about the Americans and being an American and the independence and the freedom there. So how did you react to that atmosphere as people look down on those that identified as rebels or Americans, what they were called, either or, and their ideas of freedom for all?
Well, it was a difficult time because they were living in an area where if they voiced that, they could be arrested and put.
Which we saw happen to Lisa's dad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And grandpa.
And grandpa. And or killed even.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was a very difficult time. And especially for her dad being in the British Army.
Mm-hmm.
I felt bad for her because her dad kind of treated her like property. Like, yeah. Well, she doesn't have a say so. And I'm going to put you in pretty much prison in the fort. And you're going to stay here and do what I say. And then when he finally did let her go out, and then he would find out, okay, you're back in here. And he just went like she was like, does my dad even love me? Like, what happened to my dad?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I felt bad for her for that.
He went way overboard on the protective end.
Yes. Yes. And then, like, when he had Daisy and Lisa in his office, and Lisa was, you know, like, making them, you have to choose either mm-hmm. British or, you know, and like,
yeah.
Yeah. I would be terrified.
I think they were. I mean, she had all those documents hidden, so nobody knew that she was a secret rebel,
mm-hmm.
you know? Mm-hmm. It's just so bizarre to me to think that.
I know.
You had to be quiet about it because, you know, well, we've only ever known freedom in America, which mm-hmm. I am incredibly thankful for. But, Jamie, what are your thoughts?
I also, it was strange to me, too. But I'm kind of that's my personality. I'm going to stand up for what I feel is right, regardless of consequences, which isn't very smart, but you try to think about what it was like back then when it was, I mean, it's more life or death. It was way more dire to voice how you felt about things, but it was really strange to see the difference. But I did put down that there were people like Chaz and Captain Tully, like, there were people that, even though, like Tully, for instance, when he went to get Rafa to pretty much save Daisy and Lise in the office, and he chose what was right over what was right for him. Like, he mm-hmm. knew that they needed saved, and he saved them. And like Chaz, when he said, you know what, my son's finally standing for something, and it's right, I'm going to stand with him. So that was, it's just hard thinking the perception, but like respecting the people that actually took a stand
mm-hmm.
for realizing how different it was, but it kind of makes me wonder where I would be back then. I'd probably be in jail.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminded me. To be honest, I feel like it paralleled some of the times we just come out of, and maybe we're still in, and I don't realize it. Where it was like, man, to share the truth, you were persecuted relentlessly. Mm-hmm. Now you may, and some have even over the last 4 years have even done jail time for things they should have never been put in jail for mm-hmm. to begin with. And so mm-hmm. I just felt like we were. So when I read that, I'm like, oh my goodness, we've been living in that kind of atmosphere. And Chaz is the one that made the comment when he stood up and he said, if you're going to put my son in jail, you might as well throw me in with him, because mm-hmm. I'm standing for the American way, mm-hmm. Basically. And he said, it's a sad day when your friends throw you in prison for speaking your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my goodness, I feel like that's what we've gone through recently. And it just blew my mind, the parallels there. Again, we didn't have the threat of death. I mean, they were actually in a wartime, a little bit different, but still. Did you guys see those parallels?
Yeah, like, you know, they tried telling you guys were friends and you just thrown him in jail mm-hmm. and just. But I did notice, like, Rafia, he saved so many people.
Yep.
In this book that, you know, like, he was just there at the right time, knew what to say, knew what to do.
He was definitely God's instrument for those people.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is really cool to see. I love how she wrote that. Also, there on a lighter note, I felt like when they were calling them rebels, I immediately thought of Star Wars. Having grown up watching Star Wars with Dad over and over, so I thought, oh my goodness, we would have been rebels. Anyways, what did you think about how Lise and the others always turn to prayer in hard times? That's something I loved about these characters. Every time, because, I mean, they kept facing trial after trial. It was like non-ending. And every time it was, okay, Lord, help me out. Open the doorway. You know, show me mm-hmm. where to go. You know, all of this. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts on that?
It was commendable. I think it was a good reminder, like, God should be our first lifeline. It did actually have one written down. I think it was like page 77 or 78. It's when Scarlet is looking in at the ball where Lise is, and you see Scarlet's point of view. Like, you know, there's Lise who always feels bad, but then it's like you actually see what it's like to be in Scarlet's personality. But the thing is like, she immediately kneels down. And the thing that really kind of caught my attention was she immediately kneels down and she doesn't ask God to fix the situation, but she asks him to get rid of the bitterness in her.
Mm-hmm.
It was so heavy to me, because it was like, oh my goodness, like, she's not, you know, it's not Lord, deliver me. It wasn't Lord, change this. It was just like, help me accept it. Like,
yeah,
you put me here. This is where I am. Take the bitterness from my heart. Mm-hmm. And it was just. Yeah, like, not only to go to God first, but to actually pray to God for you instead of like, oh, fix this.
Yeah.
This. Like,
mm-hmm. No, I agree. That was a good one for her. Probably too, because she didn't ever see a way out either.
Mm-hmm.
Were you going to say something, Mom?
Yeah, I was just, you know, that they had the faith enough to go to God and know that he would be there to listen mm-hmm. instead of trying to turn to something or someone else. They had faith in God.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, you know, that brought out
mm-hmm.
good points.
Mm-hmm. And they talk about, Lise talks about, like, well, when you read her thinking about, oh, I prayed for that, and look how you came through.
Mm-hmm.
In different situations that came up. So, all right. Now, did you enjoy Lise and Raphael's love story?
Yes. I thought it was cute.
I thought it was sweet.
Yeah.
I got a little, like, at the end, because I'm like, just get them together already, forever, you know?
Yeah.
It just seemed like there was a lot of... Yeah. But I do love how
how
it ended, for sure. How would you rate the following elements then? What would you give the drama level?
I put mocha to latte. A lot going on.
I would say mocha to latte.
Yeah. You agree. I think so too. There is a lot of drama just because of the times that they're in.
Yeah.
How about the mystery level?
Okay, for espresso and
what do you guys think?
Probably espresso.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there was a lot of mystery.
In this one. I don't think there were as many twists and turns as there were in the first one, for sure. How about the suspense?
Mocha to latte?
Same.
Yeah, because there's a lot of moments of like, are they going to get caught? Are they, you know, what's going to happen here? Yeah. How about inspiration?
I put mocha to latte.
Yeah, I'd say mocha to latte.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. She's really good about weaving in just them living out their faith. How about the romance level?
Mocha?
Mocha.
Mocha. It's not overpowering, but it's there.
Okay. All right. I'd probably do espresso, but you know me and my romance rating. Anyways, what is your overall lasso rating of The Creole Princess by Beth White?
Mine would be like a 1.5 to 2.
Okay.
Only because how far like space is between them and trying to keep, you know, track of everybody. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, it was harder for me to get through this one. Okay. I would say 1.5 to 2.
Okay.
I would give it a 2 for the same reasons that Jessica had. I enjoyed it, but I did enjoy it once I realized who everybody was.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But I had a hard time getting into it because it's like everybody in the first book is dead. They're gone. And you're like, who are these people?
Yeah.
And but once I got that figured out, I really enjoyed the book.
Yeah. How about you, Jamie?
I would go 2 lassos. So I second it. I really enjoyed Lise and Rafa and Madame Gilvez and just some of the scenarios. So I think that's what kind of kept it at a 2. Yeah, it's just really good story, just a lot. Like, you had to really think about who was who with the time gap. It made it a little confusing.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 3. I loved it, but I love reading anything around the American Revolution and beyond.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Up to World War II. I do like World War II stuff, but the most part is that revolution. I don't know. Because I think I'm really a rebel at heart. I loved what they were doing. I loved how bold these characters were and that they were like, we're getting out from under the thumb of England. No offense, Brits, but I enjoy being an American. So, anyways. All right. Well, that is our discussion of The Creole Princess. And next week, we are going to talk about the final book in the series, The Magnolia Duchess. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, please consider sharing our podcast. Every share helps us reach more readers and authors like you. Until next time, happy and blessed reading and writing.